with Soccer Talk Podcast, the only podcast that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online and apps. In episode 110, we discuss our thoughts on the partnership between Sky Sports and NBC, 360-degree replays are coming to the Premier League, good news for Apple TV owners who are Fubo TV subscribers, how the ratings for the US men's national team friendly did, as well as an interview with TNT's producer about the Champions League, plus the letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, aka The Gaffer, and I'm joined by my co-host, Kartik Krishnayar. Kartik, the last time we spoke, a couple of weeks ago, you were in India, getting ready to leave to go to London for a couple of days before heading back to the States. Now, for soccer fans in the United States who are used to, you mean, basically being inundated with so much Premier League coverage and coverage from around the world, really, you name it, any league you want, you can watch it on streaming or television. What was it like being in London, just probably a couple of miles away from some of these stadiums, on a weeknight in London, and what was the experience? I mean, did you feel connected or disconnected?
No, disconnected completely. I mean, this has happened. I think we've had this conversation, Chris, on this podcast and its predecessor podcast every time I've gone to the UK, which is probably about a half dozen times since we started doing this show, or more maybe, that's just what happens because of Sky, because of BT, because they're premium channels, because also weeknight fixtures make it worse. You just, those matches are going on, and there's a whole world going on completely unrelated to it, a parallel universe almost, even though where I was miles away from Selhurst. I mean, just, although I don't think Palace was playing at home, but I was very close to Selhurst. I was near, during the course of the couple of days, every other ground in London. So it was a little bit surreal. And again, unless you seek out a place that has Sky, that advertises they have Sky, you don't really get a chance to watch these games. And then the midweek matches make it worse, Chris, because there's no match of the day. So the one thing you always have on the weekend, even if you're disconnected, is you do get match of the day, which is still, I think, a great experience. I think the analysis, the level of analysis from the likes of Alan Shearer and other match of the day is still higher than what you generally get on Sky. I know Americans are accustomed to getting little bits from Carragher and Neville, which are good for Monday Night Football. But in general, overall, consistency-wise, the BBC is better. Match of the day, I believe the punditry is better, but you don't even get that midweek. So, I felt very disconnected, to be honest with you.
Wow. And that's the thing, though, too. Wednesday, just yesterday, we were recording this podcast on Thursday. On Wednesday, Derek Ray began the broadcast of the Everton-Man City game, starting out by saying that this game is not available to viewers in the United Kingdom. Just to illustrate how big of a match this is, and no one on television can actually see it. The only people who can see it are the people at Goodison Park in the stadium. And the other thing too, even the Copa del Rey match, Real Madrid against Barcelona, I believe that was only on 11 Sports in the UK through streaming, which is on kind of the brink of going of collapsing. It is a surreal experience. I mean, kind of being there in a country or on a continent where there's so much soccer. But again, I guess for us in the United States and North America and around the world, really, we've got it good. We've got it really good.
Yeah, Chris, I feel like we've discussed this time and again every time you or I have gone to the UK. But for newer listeners and newer fans who may not know, you have it really good. And I would say that to fans in India, too. I mean, you have so much access to Premier League and Bundesliga in India. I know those midweek matches, I already checked the program guide, were on in India on regular cable or satellite television, not on a premium channel that you're paying extra for. But that's not the UK. And I have always thought at some point there would be some sort of pushback against Sky and now BT in terms of their lack of ability on mainstream televisions and mainstream for terrestrial TVs. But there hasn't been, quite honestly. And I at this point, it's never going to happen.
Yeah, and it's that balance too between also the football leagues and the football clubs wanting, spectators to go to the stadiums to watch the games in person, and they really feel that by having the television games, having the games on television, that it would hurt that. At the same time, though, I mean, illegal streaming still is very prevalent, and for thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of soccer fans in the United Kingdom, a lot of them are watching games illegally. Whether through pubs or through laptops, etc. So that's already happening at the same time. But it is fascinating, Kartik, I believe. That's the thing about Sky Sports News too, Kartik. We may as well go right into that. Is for listeners who watched the transfer deadline day last week on the Thursday. Kartik, I think you were traveling in the day, so you didn't catch stateside. But we got 3 hours of Sky Sports News coverage for the first time in, I believe, 6 years on US television. And we got 3 hours of NBCSN coverage with Rebecca Lowe and the analysts. And I've been watching Sky Sports News for the last 6 years, on and off. Went through different periods where I'd watch a lot of it. And to me, it's really bad television. I mean, last Thursday was a perfect example of this, is that if there's not much going on in the transfer window, which there wasn't, one of the biggest stories of the day was Peter Crouch moving from Stoke to Burnley. I mean, first of all, the whole transfer deadline day in general, that whole thing as a news item is really a dud. It's been a dud for years. Nothing really happens at that stage. Most of the big clubs do their deals earlier in the window, if not before the window, and then once the window opens up, they kind of announce that deal. So that's the first thing. The second thing is the actual coverage is just so tedious, so sensationalized by Sky Sports News. It's really just overdone. It's choreographed. You have like Jim White pretending to be on a phone, on a mobile phone, talking to an agent or talking to a manager, and the whole thing is just so fake. I just thought it was the most boring, overdone, just piece of crap I've seen in a long time. And I'm disappointed that NBCSN, I guess they have to, in a way, maybe with this partnership, look for ways to kind of work together. And I don't know, I just thought it was a really bad decision by NBCSN to have 6 hours when they knew nothing was really going on. It was just wasted television. Kartik, what's your response?
My response is that Sky just doesn't give me much, right? And my hope and NBC, thanks to Comcast owning both, that you might see NBC begin to rub off on Sky in terms of how they present, the type of analysis they give, the strength of the analysis, etc.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully that happens. One of the things that did happen this past weekend, and I missed it, and it's actually in the listener mailbag, is that Neil Ashton and Andy Townsend did a segment. I believe it was on the Sunday morning. I missed it. So I don't know what that was. Andy Townsend's pretty good. He isn't one of my favorite analysts. Neil Ashton is fantastic. Neil Ashton and Andy Townsend have worked together a lot in the past on, I think, the Sunday Supplement on Sky
yes.
Sports, which is a really good program.
Which is one of the few Sky, a few Sky shows worth watching, honestly, about football.
Absolutely. And a lot of it is because of Neil Ashton, in terms of him leading the show, asking some thought-provoking questions and getting some good analysis out of the pundits or journalists that are on that show. So hopefully that we'll see more of that. Hopefully we'll see more of Neil Ashton and maybe some other former players or pundits. But going back to Sky Sports News, the transfer deadline day, just for 1 second, it was comical. The arrival of pizza on the set was one of the few moments of excitement on the set. They got so excited. They're like, oh my gosh, the pizza has arrived. And then you have a picture of, you see footage of Sam Allardyce eating the pizza. It was like nothing going on where, oh gosh. But that's the thing though too. I think there's ways for NBCSN to tap into Sky Sports to get some of their better thought-provoking analysis out of Sky. Jamie Carragher, of course, and Gary Neville are two that are not always the greatest, but oftentimes we'll have some good debates there. Hopefully we'll get some of those. I'm sure those two guys are really busy anyway, though. But that's my fear. That's I think the fear that I have is that Sky Sports might dilute the value and quality of NBCSN's coverage, which for the most part has been fantastic.
So the key here is Sky Sports punditry, Sky Sports programs, are they going to complement and enhance on the outside or in addition to what NBCSN already offers, or are they going to supplant some of NBCSN's current offerings? Are we going to get more punditry from Sky Pundits in replacement of Earl, Martino, and Musto? If that's the case, if that latter scenario is the case, I don't want any part of it, right? Let's make sure that does not happen. I think, if anything, UK audiences, as snobbish as some can be about anything coming from the United States in terms of this sport, would be very impressed if they saw Robbie Musto, Kyle Martino, and Robbie Earl giving the analysis and commentary they do about Premier League matches. So I'm hoping maybe it's the other way around.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I mean, a good example of this where Sky Sports could have benefited from NBC's analysis and expertise on transfer deadline day was the biggest signing of that week, which was Miguel Almiron from Atlanta United, Major League Soccer, to Newcastle United. And you could see on Sky Sports News on the transfer deadline day that they were fumbling. They didn't know anything about this guy. I think you had Carlos Carvajal, the former Swansea manager, on the set, giving his analysis, which wasn't much. Some of the pundits were describing him as a striker. You mean where he's...
Yeah, right.
So that's a perfect instance where you can say, hey, you mean let's go over to one of our NBCSN experts. Let's go to Robbie Earle. Hey, Robbie, what have you seen from Miguel? What type of player is he? How can he contribute to Newcastle United? And then that's good quality. That's something that definitely is advantageous to Sky Sports and the relationship with NBCSN. But my thing is that NBCSN and Sky Sports are at complete polar opposites in terms of the way that they cover the sports. So NBCSN is very, a little bit highbrow at times, but very, very, very clean, very smart, very analytical. Sky Sports News is the opposite of that. It's a lot of hot takes. It's a lot of sensationalized drama. It's a lot of it's very fake in many ways too. I mean, so how those two work together will be very, very interesting to see over the coming months, because there is a way to tap into each other, but hopefully hopefully NBCSN doesn't go down a level because of Sky Sports News.
Yeah, real quickly on the Almiron thing. I mean, this is how perceptions, wrong perceptions, get created in the UK. Because Sky kept describing him as a striker, Chris, the perception then became among general fans and even other broadcasters and other journalists that Almiron was a striker, he was a goal scorer, he was a guy that Rafa Benitez in Newcastle had signed because maybe Salomon Rondon isn't scoring enough goals, which he probably is scoring enough goals, and Ayoze Perez, who's now playing on the wing, isn't producing enough. In fact, he's a creative central midfield player, and I don't know how they got this wrong. And clearly they didn't even bother. I know they have a lot of contempt for Major League Soccer and for the U.S. in general in some quarters in Sky Sports and in the U.K. media. But to not even do the basic research and allow this thing to fester for days was this is one instance where I do side with those American print journalists and American people who cover MLS who seem to be outraged by the way it was covered in the U.K. They got his position and his role completely wrong, which is crazy. I don't know. And again, you're right. You just throw it to Robbie Earl for 3 minutes. He could have corrected that, and the perception never would have spread within the UK.
Exactly. So. Yeah, definitely. And that's the thing, though, too, is that British coverage, pardon me, British coverage of the game of soccer, it depends who you go to. I mean, some of the coverage is really bad. Some of it is really good. Same for the United States. I mean, depending on which outlet or which media company or website you go to, you live and learn as time goes on to figure out, okay, who's actually got the eye on the game and is actually watching what's happening versus who isn't. And for me, Sky Sports News, or Sky Sports in general, feels very much like talk sport. It's very focused on the working class person. It's focused on the mainstream. The level of analysis and the level of the level of analysis really is aimed at kind of the working class. It's not meant to kind of be more higher level. It's not meant to be more thought provoking or analytical. It's very much trying to reach your target demographic, which is then also trying to, get to the advertisers who like to, get to that target demographic. So in many ways, I think someone like Graeme Lasseau, who is more thought-provoking, more intelligent, really. Graeme Lasseau, isn't on Sky Sports News that much, isn't on Talk Sport that much. He's on NBCSN, and that's for a reason, because basically NBCSN sees the value of someone like a Graeme Lasseau, and Lee Dixon, somebody else too. Lee Dixon, you can see him on the BBC, you'll see him on ITV, you'll see him on NBCSN, but you don't really see him much, if at all, on Sky Sports News or on Talk Sport.
Yeah, you see him on Premier League productions, which are for overseas audiences too, with Lee Dixon.
Exactly. All right, Kotick, let's move on to what you've been watching. Any standouts? Was there any one particular program or one particular game that stood out for you as your game or program of the week?
Well, let me say, for me, the program of the week was my London Fort Lauderdale flight, flying back from the UK after not seeing football that was going on a walking distance from me in some cases, or long walking distance from me, was Bobby Robson More Than a Manager. You talked about this a few weeks ago or months ago when you saw the documentary. It blew me away. Now I learn it's the last day I could have seen that documentary, because I flew on January 31. On February 1st, or did I fly in February? Whatever the case, a few days later, a colleague of mine took the same flight, and it was not on there. It had been replaced by another documentary. So yep. I got the opportunity to watch this. I think it tells us so much about not just Sir Bobby Robson, but some of the characters whose lives he shaped, whether it was Brazilian Ronaldo, whether it was Jose Mourinho, whether it was Gaza, and the way Gaza, even with all of Gaza's problems, still talks about and thinks about Sir Bobby Robson, whether it was Alan Shearer or Gary Lineker, or Pep Guardiola, even featured prominently in that documentary. Obviously, Guardiola being a Cruyff disciple, but has a lot of time and respect for Sir Bobby. It was just outstanding. And it was the production level, the way it was done, the way it was presented, which is the key to any documentary. But then also just those testimonials and those personal interviews. I do warn the Legion of Manchester United fans who have a hatred for Jose Mourinho not to watch this documentary, because it may make you feel... Oh, and by the way, Sir Alex is quoted extensively in it as well, but it might make you feel a little softer towards Jose. It gave me that feeling, and I've always been a critic of his, but there is a human side to Jose Mourinho after all, and you see it throughout the 2 hours of this documentary.
Yeah, definitely. So for those listeners who are interested in that, I believe it's still on Netflix, and it is highly recommended. It's really good... for those people who remember Bobby Robson or who don't, for me, what came out of this film, other than kind of how he touched Jose Mourinho and Pep Guardiola in terms of their coaching styles, was about the man Bobby Robson, and just how much of a really kind of just larger than life, but really, I guess the word would be just an honest character, somebody that you could feel that you'd have an attachment to, that you would admire for all the things. He was a great man. At the end of the day, he was a great man, and this documentary really kind of tapped into that big time. So highly recommended on Netflix there. For me, Kartik, probably the match that I was match or program that I really enjoyed the most this past week was Leeds United against Norwich City in the Championship, and first against second in the table. Norwich City looked fantastic, and Norwich, if they keep on playing like this, they're going to be going back up to the Premier League. And the thing about this one too, Kartik, for me, was that the Canaries are just so good defensively, and they made it very difficult for Leeds to really kind of penetrate the back line. And as we know, watching Leeds United this season, one of their assets has been their attacking side of football, creating so many chances, scoring many goals, but being vulnerable in the back. And as we saw in this game with Pukki from Norwich, he continues to make such a big difference for the Canaries. And I think Leeds will be okay. And I know on Twitter, I think you were posting some things that you were kind of concerned. But I think Leeds will be okay. But Norwich City looks fantastic. And then, Kartik, what about the USA-Costa Rica game? Did you get a chance to watch any of this?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty pretty straightforward. I mean, I think for me, the big takeaway, regardless of Fox's coverage, and I thought there were just some clunky aspects to Fox's coverage, although I did, there were parts that were quite good. I thought the big takeaway was how the U.S. played. I mean, stylistically, what I've tried to watch at Berhalter in the last couple months watching old crew matches, I saw a lot of that in terms of passing principles and positioning. So that was the real interest for me. As far as Fox's coverage, it's what you would expect. I do think, however, it was a little awkward putting this match on Big Fox. I'm interested in seeing the television rating from it, but because it was essentially a B friendly or an A minus friendly.
Yeah, definitely. So we'll get to that in the TV ratings section. One more from me before we go on to the next segment, and that was Barcelona against Real Madrid in Copa del Rey match on Wednesday. This one was unfortunate, really, for a lot of the viewers that watch beIN Sports, the English language channel, is because right before this game, we had the PSG French Cup game, and it went into extra time. So as soon as this game ended, which was about, you know, like 2:59 p.m. Eastern time, and with Copa del Rey kicking off at 3 o'clock, there was maybe like a minute maybe of pregame, which it wasn't really a pregame coverage. So I kind of felt we missed out on this one big time in terms of the pregame coverage, the discussion, the analysis, the build-up, the hype, all of that stuff was gone. And the match itself was pretty decent. It wasn't the most entertaining match. It was some good football. But it now sets the stage for the second leg in a couple of weeks, and then the El Clasico in the league a week after that. So, but all in all, enjoy the game.
Real quick thing I want to mention is that Monday pregame show hosted by Derek Ray on NBCSN, I thought was outstanding. They brought Steve Bauer in for his usual Monday segment, but they allowed Steve Bauer to interact with Kyle and Robbie, and actually Bauer posed questions to them. And get really kind of a what felt like a roundtable discussion of four people, Derek Ray, Steve Bauer, and Kyle and Robbie, instead of just the general, okay, Derek is going to ask Steve questions. I thought it was fantastic, and it's the first time I've seen them do that, and I hope they continue that with their Monday segments. It's also just good to see Steve Bauer and Derek Ray both on our televisions, two of the elite commentary voices, in my opinion, in the English language.
Yeah, that's great news, especially because oftentimes it would be Steve Bauer talking for about 2 or 3 minutes, giving his kind of his analysis, and then back to the studio, and it'd be like, say, Robbie Musto saying, like, well, as Steve said, blah 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 blah, with no opportunity kind of for back and forth. So that's encouraging there. So things are slowly they're trying to finesse and find ways to improve the coverage, which is definitely complimentary.
Let's hope it rubs off on Sky.
Yeah, right. All right, let's move on to TV streaming news, Kartik, and I'll have you kick it off.
So ESPN Plus now has over 2 million paid subscribers, double the number from 5 months ago. We just got this news yesterday. And part of it is UFC, as has been speculated, but I think part of it might be also the FA Cup, which debuted in this time period, in this five-month window where they doubled their subscribers.
Absolutely. So the next news item is that beIN Sports has announced that it's moving forward with additional legal action against Comcast through the FCC due to Comcast's unwillingness to negotiate concerning the restoration of beIN Sports to the Comcast platforms. As most of our listeners know, beIN Sports was removed from Comcast and Xfinity platforms in July, and then that's really denied subscribers access to, you mean, La Liga, Copa del Rey, Copa Libertadores, so on and so forth. So this is interesting because Comcast about a month and a half ago, went ahead and filed with the FCC. Now they're coming back again and actually looking like legal action. So they're getting more and more serious with Comcast. Comcast, at the end of the day, it's one of those things. It's the rates that beIN Sports is offering Comcast is the same rate as before. Comcast, as far as I know, is not taking any calls from beIN Sports. They've stopped communicating with them. And Comcast really hasn't come out with a strong reason why they don't want beIN Sports on their programming. Why is it? What's the reason? It's not because of cost, because it's the same cost. But is it because of other reasons? Is it because that Comcast owns NBC Universal, which owns NBC Sports, which has the rights to the Premier League, which is the La Liga's number one competitor in terms of the technical European soccer? What is it? So Comcast has been very silent about this, but with beIN Sports pushing with the FCC and now this legal action, it'll be interesting to see what Comcast comes back with, or what the FCC comes back with in terms of trying to get beIN Sports back on Comcast. All right, Kartik, what's up next in news items?
Yeah, so Fubo TV is now integrated with Apple TV's app, giving iPhone, iPad, and Apple TV users easy access to their favorite shows and movies on demand, as well as key matchups in the NBA, NHL, Premier League, UEFA Champions League, La Liga, and much more. This makes Fubo TV just the second live TV streaming service to launch with the app, as well as with Siri, which is coming soon, with a single sign-in, ahead of DirecTV Now, ahead of Hulu, Sling, YouTube TV, etc. It's just so cool, all these new things that have been integrated in the likes of Fubo over the last couple of years. It's more than just a streaming service where you just randomly get matches or whatever you're looking for. There's so much more to it now.
In the next news item, for those listeners who have watched La Liga and have noticed whether it's a game from the Bernabeu Stadium or from the Nou Camp or other stadiums, oftentimes in those big stadiums in La Liga, you'll see 360-degree replays. So not only will you see the replay of what happened in a goal, but then maybe a minute or two later, you'll see an actual 3D where the camera goes all the way around, and you get to see from different angles exactly what's happening, what happened in that instance. Well, now the good news is that Arsenal, Liverpool, and Manchester City have leveraged Intel's technology to capture every match element from every angle with this 360-degree type of technology. It recreates the action on the pitch and presents that from an ideal vantage point or player's perspective, using Intel's unmatched data processing capability to deliver the experience to fans. So beginning March 10th, this technology will bring fans closer to the action. From what we understand, the Premier League, in terms of their coverage of games that are going to be at these stadiums, they will have access to this technology. And we'll have to wait and see if and when and how they use it. But so in the coming weeks, so the coming months, expect to see some really great technology that we can see through NBCSN because of the Premier League, but also worldwide on the world feeds of the Premier League games. So this is going to be something to keep an eye out for. And from La Liga, when I've seen it on La Liga, it's been some incredible technology too. So looking forward to seeing that. And Kartik, one last piece of news, and this came out early this morning, just right before the podcast. This is really interesting.
Yeah, so just breaking news this morning, about 2 hours ago, we learned that UEFA is launching its own OTT service, its own streaming service, but it will not be available in Europe or North America, at least until 2021, when the current rights cycle for broadcasters in Europe and the U.S., and the U.S. it's Turner, of course, expires. So, but this is exciting news. There's some speculation that UEFA could launch something similar to what American sports leagues have launched in terms of NBA match pass and things like that, which would be, I think, kind of cool and huge for UEFA competitions, especially as they're launching a potentially a third club competition, and also have Europa League, which gets less coverage on linear television and on regular television than the Champions League.
Yeah, and this is not available in North America or Europe, but UEFA TV, when it launches later this year, in about 6 months from now, it will have the capability, if they wanted to go ahead and show non-UEFA competitions. So it's not all about UEFA. So UEFA said, okay, yes, we will look at the different competitions that we own. So the Nations League or the Champions League, and looking at, say, I don't know, Nigeria is one example, just a hypothetical example. In Nigeria, UEFA TV might launch with a Champions League package after 2021 and say, okay, anyone who wants to subscribe and watch the Champions League, subscribe to UEFA TV. You'll get access to that, as well as maybe the Nigerian League or whatever leagues are available to them that UEFA thinks that they can package together and offer that as a product to those people in Nigeria or whatever country it may be. So it's a great test, I think, for UEFA, because they can see, in terms of having that direct-to-consumer, cutting out the middleman, really, having that direct-to-consumer subscription package and offering, whether or not this may work. And starting it outside of North America and starting it outside of Europe gives them the opportunity to test it, to figure out how to make it work, and then eventually, perhaps, maybe in the future, when TV rights become less valuable and when they can actually make more money through a direct subscription to consumers, at that point, maybe they look at North America and Europe and say, okay, now we're ready to launch UEFA TV globally. All right, Kartik, moving on to TV ratings. Some interesting numbers this week. One of the big ones, or actually the biggest one we saw, was Club America against Querétaro. This was in the Liga MX, and this was 845,000 viewers watched this game on Univision and Univision Deportes Network combined. Then we had some of the other numbers. So we had, for example, Manchester City against Arsenal on NBCSN on Sunday, 653,000 viewers, so on and so forth. Actually, Leverkusen, for the third week in a row, the Bundesliga's over the 100,000 mark. And we have Leverkusen against Bayern Munich. This one was on Univision Deportes Network, 129,000 viewers. But the big story, Kartik, to me, was something I posted on Twitter this week, and that is a comparison between the TV ratings for the USA Costa Rica friendly on Fox, on over-the-air Fox, and on the same day, the ratings for Cardiff City against Bournemouth on NBC over the air. And the Cardiff match kicked off at 12:30 Eastern Time. USA gets, I think, about 3:30 Eastern Time. More viewers tuned in to watch Cardiff against Bournemouth than they did USA against Costa Rica. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it was because it was a V-friendly during a non-international date. And quite honestly, I stumbled upon the USA Costa Rica game. For some reason, I thought it was a primetime match and had DVR'd it on FS1 because I guess they were showing a replay. So I didn't even know the time. And then when FootMob notified me that the game was start kicking off in 15 minutes and the lineups were out, I thought it was kind of weird. Are they taking the lineup from the previous match? And then it occurred to me, hey, check Unimas. And check Big Fox, and I ended up watching it. Some of it on Big Fox, some of it on Unimas, which at 3:30 Eastern. But I wasn't even aware of when the match kicked off, which I thought was a little bit of an odd time on the West Coast. But again, they were doing it for television, and that does not seem to have netted that well. I think it's also kind of significant because Costa Rica is not Mexico or Honduras or Colombia with a lot of expats in the United States. It's also significant that 300,000+ people watched it on Unimas and on Univision Deportes, which was about, you know, a half the number on Big Fox. That's a pretty significant chunk that, to me, could have watched a match on Fox, because I don't think those are all Costa Rica fans. I think there's a lot of U.S. fans in that, English language speaking U.S. fans, that opted to watch the match on Univision. So let's watch that trend the next time we have a Fox Univision. But we've talked about this before during qualifying, right, a year and a half ago. Let's watch that trend again the next time we have Fox and Univision covering a U.S. match at the same time.
All right, next up is Listener Mailbag. And first up is Dave the K. And last week, Kartik, Juan was on the podcast. Dave says, Juan Arango's description of varying broadcast styles was very interesting. Of shows, it shows how difficult marketing by language, for example, Spanish, is. Since culture plays at least an equal part in people's acceptance, great episode. Monty says, great podcast, enjoyed the guest. Interesting about how broadcasters are different at different parts of South America, Mexico, and the United States, but still missed out hearing Kartik's opinions. You read a comment that I made on last week's podcast about La Liga TV. Apparently, I was not clear with the issue. I did not have any issues finding the channel in Sling's app. It's knowing what is on is the problem. And he went ahead and attached a picture to kind of show me. It never says what is showing on La Liga TV. I have learned that if a match is on in Spanish, go to La Liga TV to watch it in English, and I assume that that is the world feed. So that's part of the issue, too. And I think a couple of other people raised this, too, with La Liga TV, is that the programming guides, so whether it's Fubo TV or Sling TV, were for the beIN Sports Connect channels, oftentimes are not very descriptive. It's very little information. So the best way to really, I mean, you can find it pretty easily, but it's really to hunt and peck and to figure out, I mean, what times La Liga TV is on and what beIN Connect station or channel number it's on. And then once you try to experiment for maybe 20 minutes or so for a couple of days, you'll figure out when it's on, what channel it's on, and which to be able to go back to that all the time. Tim Keane says, while I agree with you that John Champion will be missed, I found that the Peter Drury, Jim Beglin duo was an excellent combo. I also found Andy Townsend and Jim Proudfoot was so much better on Sunday morning than Arlo and his Merry Men. The NBCSN morning show with both Andy Townsend and Neil Ashton, to me, is top class. A great addition to Rebecca and her Merry Men. This is where ESPN Plus falls short. There is no meaningful pregame show for any of their programs, particularly the FA Cup, although ESPN FC tries, but really only after the games. Will they ever try something? So I think we mentioned in a few podcasts ago that Max Bredos tweeted out something to say that something was in the works about the FA Cup. So it sounds like they might be working on a at least kind of a skeleton crew of having some pre-match analysis and talk, maybe halftime, maybe post-match for some of these bigger FA Cup games as they come along. Ritik says, have you guys read The Club, the book by Joshua Robinson and Jonathan Clegg? It's a great book that outlines the history of the Premier League and how it transformed English football. Even though I previously knew the basics about the league's formation, I learned a lot more while reading the book, and I think you guys and World Soccer Talk podcast listeners would enjoy it as well. Kartik, I haven't read it. I know of it. I've heard good things about it. You're a very voracious reader, Kartik. How about you?
Yeah, I actually have the book on my Kindle, but haven't read it yet.
Okay, all right. Time to move that one up. Robert Kotova says, with the return of the Champions League on Turner next week, I think it would be interesting to get your insights on this topic. Like Turner's former TV broadcaster Fox didn't do a good job on filling in on what has happened since the group stages and the knockout rounds and treated topics months after they happened like breaking news. How much attention will they put storylines like the Pulisic transfer and new players to the other teams? Man United sacking Jose Mourinho, Neymar's injury. They may only have so much time in their segment. Hope to hear your thoughts on this. Now, Kartik, that's probably a good question for Bleacher Report and Turner Sports, the executive, when you speak to him today, and we'll include that interview on this podcast. But it is a good point because, I mean, they have no daily soccer news show, just like Fox didn't either. And it is one of those things. I mean, but then again, at the same time, you've got maybe, so coverage starts at, I guess the pregame coverage would probably start probably an hour before. You've got two games to analyze. And yes, I think you'll have moments to go ahead and reflect on some of the things that have happened. But then again, it's difficult. It is really difficult because, I mean, you don't want to be talking about news that happened 2 months ago because most of the viewers tuning in already know about it. So they have to figure out a way to do it if they touch on it at all. Well, they have to at some point. So, yeah, what's your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I'm curious to see what they do because it's almost as if they would need a separate show to lead into the knockout stage saying, hey, we last left you early in December. All of this has happened since to get those storylines out. I think it's actually a good idea. I assume they're not doing it this time, but the next two seasons in which they have the Champions League rights, do something like that, perhaps a week out or right after the transfer window closes. Maybe they should do their own special on that, because now in the rule change that UEFA has allowed, you can move from one Champions League club to another. Previously, if you transferred in January, you were cup tied. That's not the case anymore. So now it has more pertinence than even when Fox had the rights.
That's true. That's true. My thinking is that they will find a way. It could be just having something on the screen in terms of just a, here's what's happened, bullet points almost. Like here's what's happened since the last time we've done the coverage, and with Man United, new manager, playing a lot better, undefeated. Something could just a screen, just a page, just so they can move into. Then going into the analysis or really kind of the pre-match analysis of what's coming up. But it is difficult. It's very difficult. I don't envy their position at all in terms of trying to figure out a way to do that. Next up is John Average Geek. He says, from what I understand, the only soccer that Flow Sports had before DC United was B1G. Is that, I don't know if that's Big Ten Girls College Soccer, that was not on the Big 10G Girls Network. Not sure how good it is. Raymond Orozco says, I consider myself a casual MLS soccer fan who watches about a game a week and as well as tuning into MLS podcasts. And I would like to see the league grow. I just don't know how I think the current system is restricted. I'm not a businessman or an economist, but if you look at things from a business perspective, in what industry does the little guy ever catch the big guy? We are led to believe that a slow growth system someday economically will be able to compete, but isn't that just protectionism? If you and I were competing against each other in the manufacturing of any product and you had the 100-year head start and hundreds of millions of dollars advantage of attracting the best in the industry and you consistently poached my best talent, in what industry would I ever be able to catch up to you? Why do you think it will work with soccer? He says, goes on to say, do transfers help? And are there good investments for the selling club league? So he goes on and on and on. But it raises a good point too, because in terms of Major League Soccer against whether it's La Liga, the Bundesliga, Serie A, go down the list of all these leagues overseas, they can't compete. They can't compete in terms of quality. They can't compete in terms of coverage. They can't compete in terms of the amount of money they can spend on transfers. What they can compete with is South America. And they can compete with South America in terms of whether it's the leagues in Argentina or Colombia or Venezuela, and probably at some point in the future, perhaps maybe Mexico. And to me, that's where they compete, and that's where they have an opportunity to continue to really to buy some of those players from South America, bring them up into the United States League and to Major League Soccer, and to give them opportunities, and then eventually have those players then go on to Europe. So, but it's a good point, Raymond. And I don't know, Kartik, if you have any thoughts on this in addition to what I mentioned.
Yeah, I agree completely with both of your sentiments, Raymond, and yours. I do have to say that based on my couple days in the UK, despite not seeing live matches, the conversations I had with people, Miggy Almiron has a lot on his shoulders. I think the entire reputation of whether MLS can be that transitional league for young talent from South America to then be a shop window for them to move to top European leagues like the Premier League or Serie A or La Liga, Bundesliga, etc., really depends heavily on how he does at Newcastle, which is unfortunate. That's coming down to one player at a club which has a history of ruining good players. That's Newcastle United's history over the last since Sir Bobby Robson left or was sacked, really. But a lot of riding on Almiron with all of these conversations.
Next up is Hernan Justo, who says, first of all, I enjoy your podcast a lot. I can't wait to listen every Thursday. I particularly enjoyed last week's episode with a guest co-host. Nothing against Kartik at all, just the guy had different knowledge about being Latino, and I am from Argentina. Don't pretend to argue because your co-host is a professional with many years of experience, but I will add my two cents here. Argentina's soccer shows and game broadcasts are, for me, not very professional. One thing is very good is the production. They have reporters on the pitch, one for each team that they give you, and they give you information in advance, like what the coach is telling the players to do. Or if a substitution, you get the information well in advance. They have full resumes of every player, so you know where they are coming from, how much the transfer cost, those types of things, which I think I literally hate that do not happen in English broadcasting. So let me see if he adds anything else here. So that's pretty much it. I mean, Hernan was kind of commenting in terms of, no country has perfect analysis of soccer. A lot of it's in terms of different styles and what we're used to. Me personally, I hate the sideline reporter or sideline journalist that they have for a lot of the games in Major League Soccer or U.S. Men's National Team or U.S. Women's National Team. They rarely add any value or any insight. But maybe in Argentina, maybe it's a little bit different. Maybe they have more knowledge of the game, or maybe they have more sources, or whatever it may be. I just find that position kind of not beneficial in any way. But good comments there from Hernan. So listeners, you can always reach us through email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. We'd love to get your feedback. So whether you see anything interesting in the even watching soccer from around the world, whether it's games or programs or anything that you find interesting, let us know about. We'd love to read that out on air, as well as get any questions you may have, or rants and raves. If you agree with us, disagree with us, we'd love to read that out on air. And Kartik, moving on. We've now got the interview with Travis Retke, who is from Bleacher Report and Turner TNT. We did interview him. Actually, I interviewed him, I think, a couple months ago to get some better insight in terms of his how they cover the Champions League. And it's been a couple of months, so it's a great opportunity for you to talk to him, to learn more about what's up with Bleacher Report and TNT and how they cover the Champions League. Here we go.
Okay, Travis, you've been at this a couple of months now with Bleacher Report Live and TNT. What have been the early returns in terms of increased interest and traffic on Bleacher Report sites and in terms of social media and fan engagement?
So, yeah, first off, just like to say thanks for having me back on. Really appreciate it. Kind of chomping at the bit to get back to our coverage. So one of the great things about having the Champions League distribution rights in the States is it enables us to really elevate the game to a more casual fan base on the VR audience, or in the VR audience. So VR football, obviously, they're diehard soccer fans, the people that we know the game well. But it's provided us with the opportunity to put a plan together, but also to surface highlights and content to the more casual fan in the States. And we're seeing that people are engaging with that content increasingly so as they become more familiar with the players and the storylines. But also we know that it's part of our job and part of our role as a rights holder and somebody who wants to grow the sport of the game in the States to try new things and to create new content that our fans or our casual or basketball fans aren't necessarily as familiar with. So it's for us, it's kind of a constant test of what's the best way to position the game? What are the best personalities to focus on? What are the best stories to tell that can get soccer fans and casual sports fans more excited about the game?
Obviously, now you've had 2 months to reflect on the group stage. What have you guys learned now that you've had 2 months to think about what worked and what didn't with your presentation style, rather than the quick 2-week or 12-day turnaround between broadcast during the group stage? Have you learned anything? Are you going to make any changes for the knockout stages?
Yeah, definitely. So I think we're in a unique position in covering the Champions League. I guess it's similar to some leagues in Europe, but having this two-month break really gives us the opportunity, as what we basically are is kind of a startup in terms of covering the sport in the States from a broadcaster standpoint, to really learn from our first few months, take stock in what worked, what didn't work, get feedback from people like you and our fans to really, you know, craft a better strategy for the spring. Wouldn't say if there's any wholesale changes that we've implemented, but there are definitely things that we've learned from. It's funny, I was catching up with Steve Nash a couple weeks ago on kind of how things went, what we can work on for these next couple weeks, and what we can focus on the spring. And he positioned it, he's like, I feel like we just wrapped up our first semester, which is actually an interesting way to think about it. Because, you know, we've got the winter break to focus on things, but it's also like, it's a learning experience, and that's kind of how we take this. But we take it a lot more seriously that it's not just education for us, it's creating a better product for our fans, too. So I just thought that was a good way to position it. But we're in looking at, like, specifics to programming itself, I think one thing that we learned and we heard and we need to get better at is our halftime coverage. And I think that just the format that we had led to it being a little bit too clunky. One thing that we're focusing on is really just opening up that segment to focus strictly on highlights and analysis as opposed to kind of jumping around and trying to cover a couple of things. So that's one thing we're definitely doing. I do think at times we try to be a little bit too much, like create content that would live both well on social and TV, and it kind of muddied things at times. So learning what content is best for social, what content is best for TV, but then also identifying whether it's pre-produced segments or storytelling segments or the champions or other things like the recreations and figuring out the best time to use that. But then also set our talent up to have some really engaging conversations and analysis that we can then utilize on our social channels. But for me, it's less about trying to force certain content and more just letting it naturally play out. And that's some of the stuff that we've thought about and that we're taking into next week.
Let's talk a little bit about your talent on your broadcast, your television broadcast, specifically on TNT. My observation, and again, maybe this is just my observation and my personal preferences, I found the pregame, postgame match, halftime shows much more informative when Tim Howard is in the studio rather than not in the studio. My question is, with him and his schedule with the Colorado Rapids, this will be his final season, but you, again, will have some Tuesdays potentially where you don't have him. Have you thought about how you format the show and how you use your talent when he's not there?
Yeah. So I hear you loud and clear on the thing that you were saying about Tim. Definitely heard you say that a few times this fall, and agree that Tim brings a lot to the show. I think he brings a lot in terms of experience, a lot in terms of analysis, and I think he's just a really entertaining and great personality. But I also think that Tim was involved in every single show for the last two match days. But I also think at that point that our talent was a lot more comfortable and had a lot better rapport with one another. So I do think that a lot of the earlier struggles that we had in terms of being able to not necessarily go as deep as we wanted to go was just a matter of everybody getting comfortable with one another. So while I feel like Tim brings a lot to the show, I also think if you look at somebody like Carlos, who's just tactically inclined in the way that he thinks about and approaches everything, and then you look at somebody like Stu, who I think is the best color analyst for live broadcasts in sports, and when you give him the opportunity to break stuff down, he does a great job, and that's kind of the way he thinks about things. I think it was more a matter of getting everybody comfortable with their roles and how they can contribute, and less a matter of him kind of being the catalyst that drove great conversation. Not to say that, like I said earlier, I think Tim's a great addition to the show. I wish we could have him every day, and I'm looking forward to having that opportunity hopefully soon. But in terms of bringing guests on or having more people involved to kind of change up the pace when Tim's not there, we're definitely interested in doing that. And it's not just bringing people in who've got experience playing, but also people who we see that could be great ambassadors of the game for non-diehard fans of the sport. So whether it's somebody like we brought in Ndamukong Suh or Jay Ajayi in the fall, or it's a particular athlete, comedian, musician who's got an interesting take on the sport, whether that content is for the show itself or whether it's for our broader coverage on social, we we'd love to have more people involved in the spring, and I think that that's definitely going to be an area of focus for us. But for me, it's focusing more on the quality of the guest and what they can contribute, whether it's from a cultural or an analytics standpoint, and figuring out how they best fit in there.
We've got a listener question from Robert Cordova, and he wanted to know, really kind of to summarize his thoughts, will you have some sort of special look or in-depth look at transfers and the changes that have been made since December, player transfers, et cetera, and Jose Mourinho being sacked and personnel changes like that?
Yeah, so I think if it's relevant to whatever games are going on, we should definitely bring people up to speed and give our takes on it. I think for me, it's less on what are people's takes or what's our talent's take on Mourinho getting fired in December or Pulisic getting the transfer to Chelsea that's going to take place in the fall. It's more how does things that happened in the recent past impact whatever you're going to see that day. So I'm actually more interested in having a conversation about how United are playing under Solskjaer and how certain players are just playing completely differently, or what his tactics are versus what Mourinho was doing, than spending more time talking about Mourinho and how things went earlier this year, or the fact that Alphonso Davies just got named to Bayern's Champions League squad is a really interesting piece of news, right? As he's a big name transfer coming over from North America to Europe. So for me, I don't want to play out old takes that have already been talked about ad nauseum, but I do want us to make sure that we have opinions and update our audience on things that are relevant to whatever they're going to see that day. We only got so much time to cover whatever we got to cover for that particular day. I'm very happy that we're only covering two games a day now. It allows us to go deeper and have some more interesting chats. I think that'll probably satisfy you guys as well in terms of where we can go for some depth of analysis, but That's the way that we see covering things starting next week.
In terms of your pregame and post-match shows, have you thought about expanding them as you get deeper into the knockout stages and maybe offering something on BR Live that you don't offer on TNT in terms of pregame and post-match?
Yeah. So I would say expanding the linear offering in terms of an hour pregame and a half hour post-match, not in our plans right now. But definitely taking advantage of the fact that we have some really smart, really engaging people on set and creating stuff for whether it's BR Live, whether it's BR Football, whether it's BR. Definitely some stuff that we experimented with in the fall that I would like to start making more regular content with, just because we've got some great opportunities, especially if we bring some guests on to do more stuff than just your traditional broadcast. So something we're keeping in mind. We have some plans that we're trying to think through right now for the final. Would love to do something for that, but I think we'll probably have a better idea on where we are with that in the coming weeks or so.
Great. And then the final thing for me today, and this is to me very, very exciting. I'm not sure if all our listeners are aware of this yet, but the E-League, they're going to be airings on TBS coming up whenever, in the summer or in the fall, which is essentially based around the FIFA video game, the EA Sports FIFA video game. Will there be cross-promotion between TNT and Bleacher Report Live and what you do on TBS with E-League? And to me, this is an enhanced soccer offering and a real sign of Turner's commitment to soccer in general.
Yeah, definitely. 100%. We've already shot some stuff that we'll be using as promotional footage for our tournaments that we're going to be hosting later this spring. We definitely want to have more involvement, whether it's with professional E-League players that are playing FIFA or having elements of FIFA or soccer video games incorporated into the show. It's something we'd love to do. We find that people react to that content really well on BR and BR Football. And I definitely know that for a lot of people, they initially get into the game, get to know the players, get to know the teams through FIFA. And I think that trying to come up with creative ways to integrate that into our show, but also cross-promote some of the relationships that we have is something we definitely need to do.
Fantastic, Travis. Well, thank you so much again for taking the time to talk to us again, and we'll probably do this again as we approach the Champions League final.
Yeah, happy to chat with you guys. Always happy to come on. Thanks for doing it. I'm excited to actually start covering the sport again next week and stop talking about it. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you to Turner Sports for allowing us to talk to Travis Recchi about Bleacher Report and the Champions League and TNT. So thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audioboom, and worldsoccertalk.com. We're also in the process of adding it to Spotify, so you can listen to it there, as well as Google Home. If you have a Google Home device, you can tell it to go ahead and play World Soccer Talk, and it'll queue up the next episode. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review on iTunes. We'd greatly appreciate it. And Kartik, heading into another week of football from around the world, what should they do?
Enjoy your football.